Shachianu, which is the advent of Shachianu in the purely interpersonal realm. So again, we want to front load a little bit of the analysis, and we're, I think, operating from a position of some degree of strength. Admittedly, it's a new application, but a lot of the conceptual ideas that have been operational, I hope will stand us in good stead as we begin to approach, you know, this sugya. So at the very outset, we ask a question. If there is indeed a notion of Shachianu on a person, what would the simplest approach be in the Lamdas? How would we want to approach that? Shimmy?
Happy to see them.
Right. So the arutz, the channel, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, you'll hear that term, the arutz, that particular branch of the Lamdas, that stream of thought, that approach of the Simcha or the Hanar or the Simchas Halev, so that would provide some kind of an explanation. Though, Shimmy, let's just carry this forward a little bit, you'd probably want to establish some guardrails, right?
Right, because, you know, every time you see your friend, you're not going to be making the bracha.
Right, very good. So you want to, you know, if it's really Simcha, so it should be subject to some kind of, you know, prakim, some kind of time considerations, and that's very important. And what else? What would be the other most obvious guardrail that you'd want to put in if you want to
How close a friend.
Right, because you're really trying to get at, you know, we're not trying to get at, if is this a good person or is this a bad person, you know, chas v'shalom. We're trying to get at, you know, how do you feel about seeing this person? Okay, so that would be, you know, one approach. And certainly, you know, apropos some of the Magen Avraham's comments in the sugya of Kelim Chadashim, it doesn't seem, you know, unreasonable. After all, you know, if he thinks that Shachianu is totally detached from the realm of mitzvos, you might want to extend it to this kind of a situation. But, you know, one does have to wonder about a major technical hurdle that has to be overcome, which is, and this is exactly a technical hurdle that was raised in the context of our previous sugya, and as opposed to, let's say, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Pesach, the first day, Shavuos, Sukkos. Ephraim, go ahead.
With what regularity, can you say?
Well, right, it gets into the question of Lazman Hazeh. Shouldn't there be a certain chalos to the Zman? Right? So, you know, that takes us in, back to the issue of Rav Shri Ragon, you know, in terms of rejecting the extension to Kelim Chadashim altogether, right? You know, just finds very hard to believe. And here again, you don't have any direct mitzvah association either. So, you know, Lazman Hazeh, it sounds like it's a Zman Miyuad, it sounds like it's a Zman Miyuchas, and so it becomes more difficult to understand if you take that strict constructionist view of Lazman Hazeh, that this is really a din in the Zman per se. And that's something that we're going to have to contend with through the various makoros. So we've established three points that we want to look into. That's if you're prone to accepting this because of your simcha orientation, you know, we're going to have to think about, you know, what the analog, Shimi's first point here, to kana v'chazer v'kana might be. What does it mean, you know, that you saw him, you know, and the Gemara already addresses this explicitly, but that's definitely the first issue that we want to think about. Second of all, you know, just like the Bali Atosvos say about Kelim Chadashim, that Kelim Chadashim Akiva, according to the Bali Atosvos, have to be
a Shuvah.
Exactly. So, Hu Hadinami, right, that this would be something along those lines, right? That we'll see the exact language and the nuances here are of a great deal of importance. So that was issue number two. And issue number three is, you know, the less that flexible you are in terms of a Shachianu is just a bracha you say when you feel an intensive simcha, quote, ba'asher hu adam, you know, the Rush's approach. So, you know, how exactly Are we going to deal with the total absence of a zman miyuchas or a zman miyuad? There's nothing about this zman, right? It's almost like a misnomer in the bracha. Shechianu v'kiyimanu v'giyanu la pigisha hazot, la ri'iya hazot, but not la zman hazeh. The question about how flexible a person would or would not be willing to, you know, to be. Rami.
I'm just thinking of an application that we have, like, what we're living through right now.
Yes.
As in, like, if ours seeing each other through the computer count as re'iya, in a sense, as in, like, when we come back to school, we have to recite this.
You're anticipating the Tshuvas HaRashba. The Rashba was presented such a question about if you saw somebody on Zoom. No, but he, you'll see that we can probably extrapolate very, it's a very good question, right? And Rami, you might say that it's actually a question that you, the rabbi, would have to, quote, you know, consult the psychologist, right? And say, you know, what exactly do we know? If you're Tosfos or the true Masadesh, and you'd probably ask the psychologist and say, you know, what do we know about the objective human experience? If you're the Rush, you might say, well, we don't need a psychologist for this, but let's ask the person, how do you feel? And if he says, you know, I only saw Rami in his little box with the yellow margins, you know, and he was limited to two reactions. He could only have two reactions, either a thumbs up or a clap. He was basically emotionally impaired, you know, this whole time. And now, you know, I see that he can do other things. You know, he could give a thumbs down, you know, whatever. You know, he's got a fuller range of reactions. Very optimistic of Zoom, by the way, not to put in any, you know, negativity. I like that. So the Rush might say, you know, Basher Hu Adam, we'll have to, you know, allow for these spontaneous expressions. So,
Rebbe,
yeah.
I don't mean to burst your bubble, but I think I just gave a thumbs down.
Oh.
You go to the participants list. Akiva,
say, when you raise your hand, you can do a thumbs down.
Oh. They're not as idealistic as I thought they were.
Yeah, no.
So, Akiva.
Well. Yeah. You've given me a lot to reconsider.
Maybe we should stop using Zoom as a school.
Right.
Anyway, those aren't reactions. Those are messages.
Oh.
Thumbs down means you disagree, but you're emotionlessly disagreeing.
Alamdos.
Thank you, Shimmy.
How is the mug needing a break? I'm a little confused by that.
You need a coffee break.
Malami chos. Okay. So, again, the more strictly constructionist you want to be about Lesman Hazeh, sort of a la Rav Shri Ragon, right, I think the harder it would be to justify this, again, unless it was a meeting, you know, and it's just an Ikar Chasar Min HaSefer kind of a situation, in a particular venue, in a particular context, where there's a Zman Miyuchas, you know, associated with it. So, don't worry, we might see echoes of that kind of an idea as well. Okay, so just one last point. Yenison, go ahead.
Sorry, just another, I guess Kasha or maybe Shiloh.
Right.
We can really say that's based on Simcha when Avada one would say that for like an Aviv or Imoy, despite what you might feel, unfortunately there's some cases, but despite what you might feel, you would be mechuyav to make the bracha.
It's a very important question, right? So it certainly if it was an expression of kavod to make such a bracha. And we'll talk about that because, you know, the Gemara's Maisa that it quotes is so confounding. It's such a strange story in terms of what it's meant to teach us, but it might touch on some of those issues, you know, how we think about this bracha. So that's a very important question, you know, in terms of the objective. What Yenison is basically saying, I think, is sort of an iteration of Tosfos' point in the previous sugya. How much do we really care about simcha? And how much is this about an objective din in kinyanim in a chefza chashuv? So what Yenison is saying, let's say it's a gavra chashuv. So sure, you know, if it's, you know, asher chalak mi chachmasa li reyav, as we'll talk about, so that's already been covered. Right, so Yeah, it's an important tayara. Okay, so this is relying to a certain extent on the Gemara, but I want to treat it before we actually read the Gemara inside. So just like we've been spending a lot of time, David, trying to ferret out the boundaries between Shachianu and Hatov Ametiv, now this Gemara juxtaposes Shachianu with a different recitation. Go ahead, David.
With Mechai Hamesim.
Oh, exactly. So part of what we want to understand, in this sugya is to try to figure out, is Mechai Hamesim like a more intensive version of the Shachianu, or is it a different imperative altogether? Right? Are we just saying that it's like a threshold issue? Once you cross from 30 days to a year, it's like super simcha, right? It's more quantitative. And that super simcha, triggers a different bracha, but it's like the same essential mechayiv. It's the same imperative, to give shevach v'hodah to the Ribono Shel Olam that you've seen your friend. Or, can we argue, it's a different nusach habracha. We're not just like adding a word or two words. It seems like a different nusach habracha. The Gemara might even have a different mekor for it, right? It sounds like it's based on a different imperative. Could be that it actually is a completely different din, right? So that it's not actually on a continuum. So that needs to be understood as well. Is it a joyous reaction, or is it something of a different imperative altogether? The my nafkamina, it's a huge nafkamina. Because all of the considerations that we mentioned in terms of Shechianu, let's say how much this person is misameach you. So who wants to now try to fill in this? Ilan, go ahead.
That even if it's not chaveru achaviv alav or sameach periyas, so however you want to formulate it, you could still make a mechayev amesim even if you wouldn't make a shechianu, if you hold that it's a different mechayev. But if one is just the extension of the other, then you would have to make a, then it would have to be a chaviv alav if you hold for shechianu, you would also have to hold for mechayev amesim.
Perfect. Exactly right. So we can imagine a scenario where you'd actually be mechuyev and mechayev amesim without a shechianu because it's a different mechayev. The Mechayiv isn't, this intensive form of Simcha, but maybe we'll be able to capture some formulations like, and it's very hard for you guys to imagine because your existence is essentially contemporaneous with social media. So, you can follow people all over the world. But in the absence of that, maybe it's just a bracha saying, Baruch Hashem, the man is still breathing. Yehavach lan velo yehavach la'afra. You don't need to be somebody's best friend, hopefully, not to wish that they, had expired. So maybe you just need to have established some kind of a previous relationship. That's an important idea. So Ilan, very well done. And we're going to look at it in the Gemara, right? If the Gemara is going to need to justify it through different, a different makor altogether, that's going to be a very important signal. So this is another issue. Yoni.
It might be a little preemptive to ask this before we actually dive into the Gemara, but given what we just stated, could it be possible to extend Haroas Chaveru to possibly not just mean a literal seeing, but just like in the form of correspondence, like if you receive a letter from someone you haven't communicated with in who knows how many decades, you might be overcome with the same kind of joy that you would have if you had just seen them, and possibly you would still make a bracha at that.
Okay, so now, all kidding aside, that's getting really close. It's a slightly different hechitimtzi, but it's the issue that the Rashba was struggling with in his tshuva. It's not preemptive at all, right? So the question if Yoni, I could just restate your question, is it a din in ri'iyas panim? Or is it a din in, some kind of a social encounter? So I was going to save that point, but it wasn't at all premature of you. I think it's an appropriate question to ask. And who can be mechalik now based on Ilan's lambdas between Shachiyano and Mechayim Esim Gufa on that question? Akiver?
Shachiyano might be a din in Rayos, so you have to actually see them, but Mechayim Esim is just, oh, they're alive, so you know they're alive. At least in our day, I guess you can make this chiluk because you would know they're alive more instantaneously. Maybe back in the day, you would say Gufa the opposite, that just because you got a letter from them doesn't necessarily mean they're alive. But if you saw,
you're saying because it took 6 years. It took 6 years to get there.
I don't know about 6 years, but it could take a couple months.
That's for sure. Yeah. So that's. I think that's exactly. You were saying it right. Now you could quibble on the details about how exactly this plays out. You know. So I think that's exactly the issue. So I think that's a potential nafkamina, very likely nafkamina, frankly, between Shachiyanu and Mechayim Esim, depending on how one understands the different, you know, Mechayvim. So this is a very important point that Yoni raises, and I think there's a very strong case to be made that there's a nafkamina to be generated. Yoni's point in terms of like the significance of actually being, you know, in the same room as somebody as a generator of simcha is a very, very fundamental question. And how much of that is, like we were talking about kinyanim, how much of that is dependent on changing modes of economics? So, you know, how much of that is changing, is predicated ba'asher hu adam, as the Rush would say, on how people react to encounters. So, you know, we used to give, I have a sister who's much, much younger than I am. So she's 23 now. And we used to, she's a really different generation given the pace of development of technology. So we, you know, we would like be shocked when she would, you know, sit around hanging with her, her friends, and they would be texting each other in the same physical space, you know. But that wasn't at all strange to her that, you know, that they would do such a thing. It wasn't, it's really interesting. So, that gets to Yoni's question as well. Okay. So let's jump into the Gemara now. We've done a lot of the front loaded work. Avi, do you mind?
I do not mind.
Okay. Thank you. Is this Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi? So this is David Hamelach, as you know, as only he could have put it. I've been forgotten like a dead man from the hearts, you know, of those who once cared. Hayisi kechli oved. I have become like a lost vessel. Okay, so now what we have to try to understand is the interplay, obviously, between Rav and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Okay, so Avi, go ahead. Apropos the, you know, chakira that we suggested just a few moments ago, is Rav saying X or is Rav saying Y? Rav says, Ah, ein ames mishtakech min alev, elach shnei masai chodesh nemar. Is he right, so for Rav that's for sure the case. Now the only question left is Rav in the Shakla Vitaria, is, do we read the Gemara as saying, is Rav
saying,
is he just relative to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Yenison?
Are we saying he's giving the time of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi?
Oh, is he giving exactly the time of the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Is he actually subtly, right, disagreeing? He's not disagreeing in terms of the Psak Halacha, right? But he's saying, I think that Mechayim Esim is really a different theme, right? So if you had asked me, you know, what do I think is more likely? I think the former is more likely. It sounds like a time of demilsa, right? But It's not mochrach. You can make the case that Rabbi Shua ben Levi sees this as part of the same continuum. Haroes chaver la'achar shloshim yom, this is what you do. La'achar shnei masar chodesh, this is what you do. And Rav comes along and says, ah, and I think Mechaya Mesim is all about the fact that, you know, there's no way you could have known this guy was alive. It's been so long, and Baruch Hashem, the man is still alive. Again, I can't stress enough how sociologically this must seem so bizarre to you, but, you know, given digital communication, but in the world before that, you know, you wouldn't see somebody for a very long time. It really would be a form of, you know, estrangement, to the point where, you know, we used to say, you know, back in the day, this is even, you know, when I was your age, a blast from the past was the, you know, formulation. But, you know, again, if you're following everybody and you know what everybody's doing and you're seeing their photos, you know, getting uploaded on a regular basis, it's very hard to imagine, you know, the need for such a bracha. Okay, so that's a very good question as to the relationship between Rav and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Okay, so Avi, now comes the most challenging part of all, just a very difficult Gemara. So Rabbi Chanina was a very important figure, right? He takes over as the Rosh Yeshiva after Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And, you know, so he's walking in one direction. It's just important to get this straight. And Rav Papa and Rav Huna, Brei Rav Yeshua, are walking in the other direction. So two men, you know, and they encounter Rav Chanina. Okay, so it seems like, right, they obviously recognize Rav Chanina as a very, very, very significant Talmud Chacham who warrants this bracha, and they haven't seen him in at least 30 days, so they make a Shachianu. Okay, so now his response to them. Right. So this is pretty shocking. So he's equating them with 600,000. Kishishim ribo mi Yisrael, and therefore the bracha in that case is the Chacham Harazim. So they say to him, so whether it's literal or figurative, right, they became incensed, felt that this was galling, right? Chakimas kulehai, you're so smart, you know, how do you interpret this? Right there. Really incensed about this, offended. What happened? What was so terrible?
He thought it was an absurd equation.
Right, so they felt that his, Rav Chanina's, relating to them as Shishim Ribo Mi Yisrael was certainly inappropriate, right? And maybe an expression of some kind of laxity, even in the bracha, maybe, that he should recite this bracha inappropriately. And they, you know, however you interpret this in general in Shas, so they react, you know, with this, the strongest of reactions. It's shocking. The reason I think, it's really a strange passage altogether, but I do think that it weighs on substantially on one of our questions about the Shachianu. One of the things that we're trying to figure out, it was actually the very beginning that we raised at issue number two, was what kind of chavero were we talking about? I'm just looking for evidence in the Gemara itself. Ephraim?
Doesn't seem particularly close.
I think you just give me the thumbs up if this. Did you say it doesn't seem like they're that close? Ephraim, that's what you said? Okay, right. What gave it away? Ezra?
Kilintar.
Yeah, Ezra Baron, what was the giveaway for?
Hafkat said the part at the end where they kill him.
Right.
You know, it's not a good look.
Right. Right. Galamilsa Lamafreya that they really weren't that close, you know. Unless they were so close, you know, that this is, you know, this is just how they, you know, they demonstrated their affection. It's a strange passage, but it gets you thinking about this bracha. Now, what about the friendly banter, Noam Bernholtz says? But Noam, to that point, so what do you think that they got so worked up about?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think also the part where they were like praising each other shows they weren't so close.
Maybe. Did anybody read this Gemara and wondered that to themselves, like, what triggered that? Where did that come from? Right? Ilan?
I had a question about the Gemara. Why does it say it in the hypothetical that they would make the bracha? Why wouldn't they just make the bracha?
Let me just go back for a second. When you say that it was the hypothetical, which line are you referring to?
Like they say, "Bahadei dechazinah barichina analach tarte." Like if we, when we see you, we would make two brachos.
Or when we saw you, I mean, it's when they first saw him, like they're coming down the road. So, like, you know, imagine they're coming from opposite directions. They meet and they say, "Ah, you know, we said this bracha on you," and he says, "You know, I said the bracha on you, but I said the extra bracha because you're like shishim ribo mi Yisrael." And then they say, "Oh, really? Zap." Just wondering, you know, like, did anybody read this and think to themselves, this is, you know, a little disproportionate, maybe. Shimmy?
It seems to me that what made them so upset was Losisa Shemal Hashem.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably the, you know, most likely reading. But, you know, the pasuk says, Ki lo yinakeh Hashem, Esa Ser Yisa Shemal Hashem. So maybe there's a certain of, you know, kano kinesi lashem, that there's a sense of outrage at his, you know, laxity in brachos. I do believe that that's the simplest reading of the Gemara, but it's still pretty shocking, right? Ishimiam, even with that explanation, would you agree that it's still like, you wouldn't necessarily have assumed that would be the end?
Then, well, I'm not entirely sure how exactly he died. Like, bro, like, the way Safaria translated it, it's like, they looked at him and then he died.
Safaria has translations of this?
Yeah.
Who writes them?
Steinsaltz.
Sure.
What's that?
It's based off of Steinsaltz.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Steinsaltz is Nosnubo Enehem, and then Kama Vamis.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, we have this all over the Gemara, right? Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, you know, there's a similar incident in the story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, right? There's a similar incident. So it's just a little bit hard to know why they were so infuriated or outraged, however you want to put it exactly, you know, at this behavior. Noam? And then Genesin, Yehuda?
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with making the bracha. Like, when they were talking about making the bracha, they're mad about the fact that he unfairly praised them for some reason. Not sure why they're so mad about it. Maybe something to do with, like, Bethel versus
Israel,
but that seems unlikely also.
So you're, in the end, a little confused about all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yenison?
I mean, just trying to build off of what Shimi said, how it was based off an Isser of Lysisa Shemai Lashov, how it wasn't so much that he committed an Isser, but that he committed an Isser because he thought Aideya, I guess a Homer, you could say, or Aideya, or her Chokas Davar. He says that was all, or Aideya's flattery. Because it was through them and his thought process that he thought, oh, I'll do a mitzvah, make a kind of bracha, and I'll bring a spar for this based on because they're Kishishim Ribba Yisrael. And that they were really, the anger that I believe also that came from them is due to the fact that he didn't even realize why it was Chayta.
Or that, yeah, well, he thought he was doing the right thing. That there was like they call it like an arrogance there. The Yohara, right? Chakimas Kulehai, what, you think you're so smart that you're going to be the one that's going to determine, you know, whether, you know, this bracha should be extended to people of great significance, you know, as the Gemara will sometimes say about people, you know, Avishai ben Tsruya, right? Rubo shel Sanhedrin, you know, Nechshav. Very difficult. Very difficult because, in fact, if they did make the bracha on him, Asher Chalak Mechachma Soli Reyav, we don't make that bracha on just anybody. That's reserved for the Chachmei Amasora. So maybe he did have the right to be Mechadeshit. It's very difficult. Yehuda?
I think part of it might, I think it might be that it's not based on the bracha, but I think that this is more supposed to be a sarcastic interchange between three people that they're trying to insult one another in a more polite way, and they get outraged at his response to them, and therefore he dies.
And you read it as them saying nobody really made any brachas at all.
No, I don't think anybody really made any brachas. I think it's all done in the hypothetical, saying that, oh, we haven't seen you in so long, so we made these bracha, and then he said, oh, you think you're so smart? All right, so I made the three bracha, and they were angry, and from this anger
they felt disrespected. Right, so it's a matter of respect, honor. They reacted. Okay. So it's a very enigmatic passage. But it might actually, given that this is all the evidence that we have in the Bavli, it might actually bear very heavily on the question of what kind of chaver we're talking about. Very enigmatic passage. So let's take a look at Rashi. Go ahead, Avi.
Kechli Obed. Ustam Kli Lacher Yedbez Kodesh. Mishtachach mina leib the yeyosh bailim alachar yebeis chodesh and the beragel mitzias above mitzia daf kalches misha matzakli al shem mitzia chay lahachish shalosh regalim v'imnim tzachar asukos tzarich lahamten lahachris lapesach ba'atzeres ubichag dehainu yebeis chodesh v'shuv eino tzarich lahachris asher chalak v'ashech yano v'lahachar shloshim yom haba v'chach masal reyav k'rabich.
Again, they're establishing some guardrails in terms of the utilization of this bracha, right? Asher chalak mechachma soli reyav, you know, cannot be made, just because somebody's a participant. Nothing wrong with this program. It's a wonderful program. In the Distinguished Scholars program, it doesn't mean that we ought to make automatically. We could, but we don't automatically make, you know, asher chalak mechachma soli reyav. In such a case. So Rashi is actually taking the Gemara on the front end, Nishkachti Kemeis Malev, Haisi Kichli Oved, very, very seriously, right? You might think that, you know, Rav was saying some kind of an asmachta, but Rashi says what he's really doing, he's appealing to a din d'oraisa. This is just another example of how Hilchos Brachos are rooted in these d'oraisa realities. So what's Rashi's point? There's a chiyuv hachraza mid'oraisa liyud beis chodesh. But after that, right, not that you're allowed to just do whatever you want with it, but there's no longer a chiyuv of
Hachraza.
Of Hachraza. Because the chiyuv Hachraza, there's a clock on that. Their assumption is, Nishkachti kemeis milev hayisi kechli oved, that the kli here, obviously being compared to the human being, has already been, you know, forgotten. There's a sense of yush, of despair. And if there's a sense of despair, so you don't have to actively announce it. Again, doesn't mean that you can do whatever you want with it, but that's the din d'oraisa. And now we're understanding that this is the nature of the bracha, that you are miyoesh from this person. Okay? And now again, the only question, Daniel, that we have to answer is when you see them, is the bracha not necessarily a bracha of simcha, but you know, the person is still alive, or the simcha is so enormous because I'm going mi, yagon la'anacha, me'evel yom tov, mi'yush, you know, to realizing that od Yosef b'ni chai elcha v'erenu b'tera mamus. And I don't choose that example randomly, because let's go over to Ben Sion. Go ahead. This is, you know, the application. Rashi famously works off this principle. Okay, so take the Yaakov. Whoever those were.
Okay,
Okay, so Vayimayim li Yisnachayim. Right, so again, this is the basic idea. Nishkachti kemeis milev, it has to actually be a meis, hayisi kechli oved, and that's why psychologically, you know, Yaakov was not responsive to the tanchumim and all of the various attempts, you know, of his sons and daughters, again, whoever that means, daughters-in-law, actual daughters, to Omos, who knows, to reach out to him. He was simply emotionally non-responsive as a davar sheinu nishma because it didn't meet the paradigm of nishkachti kemeis milev hayisi kechli oved. Okay, yeah, no, go ahead.
Or would you forget them though?
But the point is that, you know, you haven't seen them for 12 months, and you know, you might assume that, you know, you'll never see them again. It's just that what Rashi is saying here is that Yaakov couldn't accept the Tanchumin because he didn't, you know, there was something about Yosef actually being alive that was impacting him psychologically. You might say that he was suspicious, in a word. So this is exactly what but your point is really getting to what the Marsha wants to talk about what the mechanism is. Like, why would you assume necessarily that the person is dead? So Noam's asking a very good question, and the Marsha will answer it. I'm just saying it could be that Yaakov himself, you know, had reason to believe that Yosef was alive, kind of a thing, you know, over and above a typical case. Let's get Shimi, and then we'll put the Marsha on the ledger. The Marsha has kind of an ingenious reading of this whole Gemara.
I just want to go back to the story earlier in the Gemara.
Yeah.
I think that it explicitly shows that they were very good friends, because otherwise they wouldn't be rebuking him like that. But clearly they went too far.
You're saying, you know, in terms of killing him.
Well, I don't think they were trying to kill him.
Oh, okay. I hear. Very, very hard to know. Okay, so let's take a look at the Marsha. Noam, do you want to do the honors since you pointed it out? Right? And perforce. Exactly. You can't do whatever you want with it. Of course, there's still a chiyuv, right, in terms of, you know, the aveda, if he shows up. So hachanami, very ingenious. So it's a really ingenious solution to the Gemara, right? It's addressing your question, right? He's saying that min hastam, the person is dead. There is a din maves and baruch mechayim esim, because now the passage of the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? And he's actually alive. So just like the kli, you know, if you came back and you actually were able to identify it, you'd have to surrender it to the original owner. So too, if the person is still alive, he's not actually a kli oved, it's just kichli oved. So it warrants the bracha of mechaye hamesim. But according to the Ramar Shah's logic, there's a very serious problem. It's an ingenious solution. But according to the Marsha, what should emerge from a purely technical point of view is you shouldn't need what? Yenison?
Shouldn't you need Yud-Bitzvei Shtavka?
Absolutely. And the Nimshal, you know, from the Kli, he likes that very much. But if the whole idea is Din Maves, you should be able to not see somebody for 11 days. It should actually be Gufa a shorter time than the Shechianu. Right? Because Shechianu should always need 30 days. But let's say the last you saw somebody was, you know, he was going to Uman. Where else? Obviously. Okay, so, you know, he was actually a Litvak spy, you know, to report back on the various, you know, terrible things that were going on there. And, you know, the measles and other such things. So he's actually on an espionage mission. And he comes back, Hirsukis, and says it's worse than you would imagine, you know, etc. You know, they're not makbid, you know, in terms of, you know, nishima achas or stay nishimos, very serious issues, come back in the report. So, and, you know, you haven't seen him since Sukkot, he should make, according to the Marsha, he was nechshav kemes, he wasn't going to make it out of there alive. You know, the breastovers can be pretty rough. Forget about, you know, there's a double din, gzeras maves. And so, you know, what do you need the 30 days for? Yenison hit the nail on the head. Like, why would you possibly need that? Mikol makom. Whatever you think of that difficulty with the Marsha, what's 100% clear in the Marsha, David, is that, is this a din in Simcha or is it a din in Mechayiv altogether? I don't think this point can be debated.
Yeah, I think it's a different
Mechayiv. He doesn't talk anything about Simcha. This is not about Simcha. He's saying that the person was a dead man walking. You just didn't know that he was walking. You had to assume that he was a dead man. After the Gzardin, the Pachad Hadin of the Yamim Noraim, and there's no way that you could have known he would have survived such an ordeal. And you see him, right? It's a technical point, you know, very much rooted in the Raisas, frankly, of Hashava Saveda. Hashav Teshivei Melachicha. Akiva.
I might be reading this wrong, but isn't the Maharsha saying that this case is a very limited case when you don't see him from basically right after one Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur until right after the next? It's not like if I didn't see him from Pesach to Pesach, I would make a Baruch Mechayim Mason, but it has to be a one-year unit from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur to the next Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, because on the last Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Hashem would have made a Gzar Din, whether Malves or Chayim. So we assume Malves. So then the next Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur that passed, and I haven't seen him since then, so I know that he was technically a dead man walking, and now Hashem didn't kill him for that past year. I think that might be what he's saying in that first line.
Yeah, he's obviously trying to preserve the simple language of the Gemara. I'm just saying that Misvara, if his whole point, his whole predicate, is that the advent or the approach of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur allows you to relate to him as a dead man, so then why shouldn't that be true in any case?
Because the din that's being gozer on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur might be for the second to last day of the year. So you can't say Baruch Mechaye Mesim until after a full year has passed, in which Hashem could have been gozer his Misa from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur on any day of that year.
Right, but again, if that's really the idea, so then, you know, why should it have to wait for the application of the Gzar Din? Why should you have to wait for that? Why is that a t'nai in the bracha?
Because
if the point is that, like, just going through a season of Yamim Noraim, we should, you know, see this person as subject to a Gzar Din Maves, so why should it have to wait?
Because how can we say Mechaye Mesim if right now he's considered a Mace? He has to pass his Gzar Din for him to be considered.
Oh, I hear that. Okay, so in other words, you know, it's like don't speak too soon.
Right. And we only know that
it's they might yet be, you know, coming for him.
Right.
It's like the old joke, you know, how did your, you know, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur go? And they'll say, we'll tell you next year.
Exactly. Right. So we can only make the Mechaye Mesim after a full year has passed since that Rosh Hashanah.
Right. But if you would see him, I hear. So if you'd see him before the next Rosh Hashanah, you'd pat him on the back and say, you know, just be careful out there.
Pretty much. I think that's what the Maharsha is saying.
Right. It's a little, it's not the most, shall we say, like optimistic perspective on, you know, the Yamim Noraim. It's hardly the Yerushalmi, right, in terms of,
not at all.
You know,
yeah.
Triumphing in Din. But I hear what you're saying. That could at least account for the, you know, the requirement of Yud Beis Chodesh. Again, it's kind of an ingenious connection to the Kli, but it requires making an assumption. Though Noam, I do think in a technical sense, it answers your question. Right? If you're allowed to make the case that the person is really Nechshav Kemes, he's what Chazal would call a Bar Ktala, in terms of somebody, let's say, who was already after Gemar Din, just hadn't been killed yet. So that's an important category. Okay, so I think in Alumdus, the most important point is that we definitely all agree that the Maharsha, Aliba de Rashi, is really expressing the idea that Rav was, we don't know about Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, I suspect it's true of him as well, but that Rav was teaching us that there are two totally distinct mechayvim in this Gemara. One mechayiv is the simcha, which generates a shachianu, and the other has to do with a person being alive that you might have had good reason, for whatever reason, to believe that this person is no longer alive. Simple reading of that is just Yud Beis Chodesh, Nishkachti Kemes Milev Hayisi Kechli Oved, that the passage of a year of time, maybe this is why the outer limits of Avelos are in fact Yud Beis Chodesh, you know, is a significant amount of time in the human experience, and that needs to be taken into account very seriously. But Meidach Gisa, you know, you have this Marsha who puts it very much as a focused product of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Okay, so that's where we are. We'll hold it up there. Let's give Shimi the last word, and then, God willing, we'll continue onwards tomorrow.
I just wanted to respond to